adequate notice of this meeting as required by Chapter 231, PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on January 8, 2016, which was posted on the bulletin board at the Roosevelt Post Office and in the Borough Hall. Notice was published in the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Will you please call the roll?
Ms. Bowman?
Here.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Here.
Ms. LaPone?
Here.
Ms. Malkin?
Here.
Mr. Tickman?
Here.
Here. Thank you. Welcome. It's a larger crowd than usual. Let's start with there have been a couple of changes to the agenda. The resolution relating to authorization for services, payment for services for the borough engineer and architect has been pulled from the consent agenda and has been put under new resolutions. And a resolution that we got today from our CFO authorizing temporary emergency appropriations has been placed under new resolutions. There are a couple of reasons for that. The first is that there were some changes to Resolution 16-56, which we can show you. And once we got the resolution from the CFO, among other things, that resolution allocates money that we can then authorize. So we figured we'd just put it in the order of allocation and authorization. First on the agenda is approval of minutes for March 28th, 2016. Do I have
so
a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Please call the roll.
Ms. Bona?
Aye.
Ms. Grandfather?
Aye.
Ms. Lapone?
Aye.
Ms. Malcolm?
Aye.
Ms. Chicken?
Aye.
Next, we have new resolution 16-54. This is a resolution from, all of you have copies. This is a resolution from our CFO authorizing temporary emergency appropriations, which we do on a fairly regular basis. This one would cost, this one would allocate legal $30,000, EMS building feasibility $15,000, shared services for the Hightstown Clerk Services, $11,000, and water sewer operating fund of $70,000. Do I have a motion?
Shouldn't there be public comment on the consent agenda first?
Oh, we didn't do the consent agenda. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Do we have any public comment on the consent agenda, which is now thoroughly confused? Mr. Clark.
Just to ask a question on the resolution 1651, if what's the basis for not participating in that?
There have been a series of articles in the Asbury Park Press about problems with the program. A number of towns have, and actually, I think that's my fault. I didn't notice that was put in the consent agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Does somebody want to pull it from the consent agenda?
I'd like to pull it from the consent agenda,
okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Bob. So 1651, we'll move down to new resolutions. Are there any other comments on the consent agenda? Do I have a motion on the consent agenda?
Move the consent agenda without 1651.
Second.
Ms. Bowman?
Yes, aye.
Ms. Grandfather?
Aye.
Ms. LaPone?
Aye.
Ms. Malkin?
Aye.
Mr. Tickman?
Aye.
All right, now going to new resolutions. First one, 16-51, advising Monmouth County Board of Taxation that the borough is opting out of the Monmouth County Assessment Demonstration Pilot Program. The program has been subject to a number of articles, primarily in the Asbury Park Press, about the fact that, I think, what is it? We're either required to, or a very large percentage of the towns are using the same assessing company, which is costing a substantial amount of money. There's questions about whether the companies that are involved are tied into the various legislators, and issues about how this really works in terms of raising. Basically what they do is they do 20% each year, 20% of the homes are assessed each year, and then from that they make a broad generalization about the rest of the town and what the assessment should be on those houses. Those are the reasons that a number of towns in the county have opted out, but I'm putting this up for discussion. Go for it.
Is anybody moving the resolution, first of all?
You want to move the resolution?
No.
Okay. Does anybody want to move the resolution for discussion?
I'll move the resolution for discussion.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second for discussion.
Okay. Michael?
Okay, I'll discuss.
Please do.
Thank you.
What are we here for?
We have the resolution states, understands the following to hold true in the event of municipal opt-out. Inspections will not, 20% will no longer be required. The assessor will certify the, okay. The deadline remains January 15th. By removing annual assessment, the assessor's ability to negotiate the retirement of multiple-year tax court appeals will be reduced, and towns will return to the expanded exposure of multi-year tax appeal refunds. By removing annual reassessment, there's a return to the mandatory use of Chapter 123 corridor of value, thus preventing taxpayers from receiving appeal reduction if the assessment was within 15% of market value. By returning to the static assessments in the old system, taxpayers may grossly overpay.
I think we've all read it. What is your...
No, the public doesn't have this, so I'm just making... My point is that we have a whole series of reasons why it's not a good idea to opt out of this thing. It's a five-year experiment. I think it should be allowed to run its course. I realize there have been problems with it. The newspaper has, you know, been making articles about them. Maybe there will be justification to them. However, as they affect Roosevelt, I don't see any harm to Roosevelt as having come from this... our participation in it. And I think we should continue into for the full 5 years. I don't see any reason to stop doing it.
Then okay. Why do you think most towns, or so many towns, do?
We don't know that
out.
Most towns do. I don't
know.
I know.
I corrected for
some
so
have,
many.
Some have. Some have made the decision that they want to.
Right. Do you know why? That's my question.
Well,
do you know why?
Apparently I don't know. They may have had, maybe their taxpayers object to the fact they don't want to see their assessments changing every year. But the thing is, the old system, obviously I assessed for 37 years under the old system, the difficulty with revaluations, there's always the possibility that you can have substantial changes after 10 years. If you do it every year, the changes are probably going to be incremental one way or the other, and people aren't going to notice, you know, aren't going to feel there's a great difference and they're not going to be upset, obviously, if their taxes go down, but some people, you know, their taxes go up, significant amount, you know, they will do this. And by doing it every year and adjusting it every year, you minimize the likelihood of this happening.
And are we permitted to assess the valuation of each of those homes and do that inspection?
Are we permitted?
By ourselves? Or do we have to hire the outside firm, which seems to be one of the primary objections?
What's happening is the assess... Well, if you want to hire somebody...
It was a rhetorical question. In order to have that work done,
you have to use a particular group
which uses a particular software of a particular brand located in a particular place. In other words, what they did was they passed legislation which said that this can be assessed by anybody as long as they're in Monmouth County, they have this number of people, and they have this particular software, which narrows it down to one company.
This was the company, by the way, that was the only company that bid... for our reval when we did reval, the last reval that we did as
well. Because the other companies have refused to come into the county.
No. This
because
before
they can't
the,
use that software.
Before the new system went into effect, Realty was the only one that
apparently
was
they're currently now not agreeing to come into Monmouth County, at least according to the newspapers.
Yeah.
The other assessing companies will not come in, so this one is cost a little more than the other assessment companies, and the other assessment companies won't bid on Monmouth County, because they're required to have software that only one company has.
I understand, so
there's a cost associated with this.
No, I understand that.
Okay, I'm skimming both sides of the
argument. I understand the problem,
okay. But
I'm saying that before this system went into effect, Realty Appraisal was, when we went out to bid, they were the only ones that submitted a bid. So they were the only ones, you know, who were interested in doing it here and looking at Roosevelt before also. So I don't see, and the I don't think that our assessor, you know, that our assessor wants to go is going to go around. That's going to pay her considerably more to go around to every house and do, you know, all the inspection. What's happened is the inspection part of it has been separated from the judgment part of it, and they said the values are set by the assessor. There's more the assessor has more responsibility for setting the value. The data is being provided through these through the inspections. That's the way the system works.
So I did have one other question. You may know the answer. The legislation, if I remember correctly, and I may not, specifically states that the inspectors have to go into a certain number of homes.
Yes.
Physically enter.
Yes, to look at the insides, which is what is required. That was required before as well.
That was my question.
That was required before as well. That hasn't changed.
Okay. Anybody else have thoughts?
What is the volatility of the amount of revenue raised by changing it every year? Is that an issue?
No,
it had been brought up before.
Well, it's an issue, but you don't know which way it's going to go.
Okay. The answer is the amount of revenue that has to be raised is independent of the assessments. The amount of revenue that has to be raised is set by the budgets. Okay. The one way in which it decreases the volatility is under the old system. The assessments are set, the tax books are filed, and then the appeals process occurs. We never had that problem, but towns where they have a large, you know, like a large industrial commercial property, and then they get, you know, they get a significant appeal, say a significant reduction on their assessment, and then the town is having adopted its budget already and having set its tax rate already is now stuck with having to somehow come up with the money to make up this gap.
It's not fully independent, Michael. If we have a fixed rate and the assessor or the inspector goes out and comes up with a valuation for Mary's house, sorry, I use this as an example, and that inspection results in a higher assessment, then the amount of tax that Mary has to pay increases.
I didn't say the amount of tax that an individual has to pay doesn't increase. His question was the financial impact on the community. The budget is set, and by having the budget adopt, which the new system does, the budget process is such that the tax rate is fixed after the appeals process. So the base on which the taxes are raised has now been determined. All appeals have been determined, so that there's less possibility of that, this town getting a hit. It's still possible that they'll go to the tax court and there'll be a tax court judgment several years later. That can happen. But at least you don't have it on the county board level. So that's the improvement that it does.
Pretty much happens regardless. Whether it's this program or any other, you're still subject to district tax appeals. So. Okay.
Yeah. The point is that this does, by coming after the tax, by coming after the appeals process, you've reduced the risk to the town of having it hold. The rate can affect, if the values are changed for houses, of course it changed for individual properties, but your question was what happens to the tax, the budget as a whole. The tax rate is set after tax rate, the base on which the assessment for the taxes are raised has been fixed.
I have a different question.
Sure.
So I'm assuming that in the Roosevelt budget, we pay for having a tax assessor.
Yes.
And previously, we went through a reassessment every 5 years.
Ten years.
Every 10 years. Yeah. So then every 10 years, there would be a larger amount in the budget,
right?
Because we'd be reassessing.
That's right. It wasn't 10 years necessarily. Sometimes it was more. Some years it was more. It depends on the amount. At the point that the county tax board determined that we were too far out of sync, and it wasn't just a matter of the ratio, but also that the coefficient deviation was too high. Because we usually maintain a fairly low coefficient of deviation, which made them more tolerant of us getting a lower ratio because the coefficient of deviation is the most important.
How much do we pay for tax assessment services when we were doing it the old way? In a standard budget, what would be the cost for tax assessment?
For the assessment or the valuation?
For the valuation.
Do you have that number off the
Well,
budget?
If you do it, I don't. I know. Her salary was pretty much the same as she came in at the same salary I had. So the assessor's salary, there's no change. The question is for the services of the valuation company.
Right.
Yes.
I don't remember the number offhand, but of course the number was they had to do the entire town. So what you're doing now is you're getting
A smaller amount every
5 years. Plus, they're not getting paid as much because more of the work is being done by the assessor.
What I want to know is how much we're paying now
so that we
could multiply by five and know how much it would cost and then compare that to the number when we had it
done and see
whether it's cheaper.
The issue is that the allegations in the paper are that the company that's doing the inspections is essentially increasing its prices because
it's
the only one who can do
these.
So I'm not sure how that.
I want to know how much we pay. That's all I want to know.
Wait, I think the last reevaluation. Yeah, George would know best, but if I recall, the last reevaluation, at least what my, I think I read it in some material I had. The last reevaluation was 2006, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read that, and I don't know what you pay. We do have a contract on file for realty data for these services, and I can't remember what that contract was for either, but we should have that handy, accessible anyway. I thought I had it with me, but I don't. It's not in there.
No, I'm looking for has the deadline been moved to May?
May 31st.
To May 31st. So we have another meeting, and this is a resolution, not an ordinance.
Correct.
So why don't we kick the can down for 2 weeks? Does that work for everybody? Okay. Anybody want to withdraw their motions? Michael?
I didn't make the motion.
Oh, I'd like to table Resolution 1651 until the next meeting.
Seconded.
So the original motion was open for discussion. Do we have to close that motion?
Motion to table takes precedence.
Takes precedence.
Yeah.
But you do need a vote on the motion to table.
Do we have a second?
Aye.
Aye.
Did we have a second?
We didn't have a second.
No.
I'm seconded.
Oh, you did.
Okay. Ms. Bona? Aye. Ms. Dunn-Calvary?
Aye.
Ms. Lapode?
Aye.
Ms. Malkin?
Aye.
Ms. Tipton?
Aye.
Wow. Okay. Going back to Resolution 60.
Would it be worth it to have our tax assessor, Deborah?
Donatelle.
Thank you.
That's a tough name to remember, isn't it?
Yes, about as bad as Jane Smith. Come and speak to us again?
She can. She's already told us what her position is. But
yeah. Sure. I know that she said she was for it, but now in light of these other details,
well, she
maybe
can answer questions.
But basically, what the newspaper is saying is that these guys know they're a single source and are taking advantage of it.
Yeah, and there are a series of other problems that they listed that I can't list off the top of my head. But since we were running out of time, I thought we should put it on, have the discussion, decide what to do.
Okay.
Just write this down so we get it. Okay. Resolution 16-54 is the resolution we received today from our CFO. It's one of our standard authorizing emergency appropriations, and it authorizes in the current fund $30,000, and by authorizes simply means that it makes available for the council to use in our budget. Legal costs $30,000. This is the current fund. Emergency services feasibility, $15,000. Shared services, Hightstown clerk, $11,000. And then in the water sewer operating fund, a movement of $70,000. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion?
Yes. The $15,000 that's going to pay the experts.
We haven't gotten there yet.
That's just
him moving it in the budget. The next one is us deciding whether or not to authorize it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why we're sort of moving things around just before the meeting.
But then you have to vote for it before you have the discussion.
No, it's the next.
You're not going to do it separately.
1656 is the separate authorization.
Okay.
Second. second.
I'm sorry, Peggy, was there more? Which one did you answer that?
Well, when it comes time to discuss 1656, I do.
Aye.
Aye.
Ms. Capote?
Aye.
Ms. Malkin?
No.
Mr. Tickman?
Aye.
All right, now we come to 1656. That authorizes payment for services of the borough engineer and an architect in regards to the EMS advisory committee evaluation. I would like to point out that changes were made, I made changes to 16-56. Just in a broad overview, congratulations, I've been selected to go on a cruise. One, the original form basically put an imprimatur on the council has asked for. It's simply been changed to say that it was requested by the committee and that we consent. And the other change that was made, I know it's a huge one, but everywhere the word utilize was used, I changed it to use because it makes me crazy. and if any of you out there can think of a circumstance under which the word utilize is used, if the word use cannot be used, please utilize your voice to tell me. Okay, do I have a motion on 16-56?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Discussion. Peggy?
Says, whereas the mayor and council have agreed to allow the advisory committee to hear testimony from relevant experts within financial constraints. So who is choosing the relevant experts?
The committee has asked to have a study done by the, actually most of the study was already done by the engineers to look at a couple of things. One was a basic layout for a building, and Bob, correct me if I go wrong here.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear it. Building what?
Potential layouts for a building of various sizes. That's number
building.
One. And the second was the actual cost of making changes to the existing buildings. So they had five engineers in here for, I guess, about an hour and a half. Then most of the engineers went away, and the two engineers remained and spoke to members of the advisory committee. Carmela came back and said the one thing that she had not brought with her was an architect, which was required for a number of the issues, and has come back and said, okay, in order to complete this study and deliver the report that the advisory committee had requested, she needed an additional up to $15,000.
And so these experts who came are impartial, or are they colleagues of Carmela? Or are they just...
I'm sorry, but that's... Sort of like, did you take the bus or bring your lunch?
Well,
are they impartial or are they colleagues?
Well, I mean,
of
I don't know if they're, you know, close colleagues of her, or did she?
I have no idea.
I mean, how did she select them?
Architects with whom she works. But the advisory council is entitled to ask for experts and have us pay them within reason. That was what we originally told them.
And so I'm just curious why you would be discussing a new building when the referendum clearly defeated.
Because the advisory committee was appointed to consider all possibilities. The referendum was about paying $571,000 in bonds to build a particular set of buildings. That was defeated. We still have the issue of what to do with emergency services. The Emergency Services Advisory Committee is supposed to look at everything from the dissolution of the emergency services to the building of a new building and determining which one makes the most financial and other sense. So they're looking at all possibilities, which is what we asked them to do.
Which is what?
What we asked them to do.
What you asked them to do.
It is what I asked them to do and the council as a whole asked them to do. Yes, that is correct. You objected. I
yeah, not that. Not the council as a whole, most of the council.
Whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, more comment? Question? Would you please call the roll?
Ms. Bona?
Aye.
Mr. Antelzer?
Aye.
Ms. Lapote?
Aye.
Ms. Malkin?
No.
Mr. Tickman?
Aye.
Okay. couple of announcements. If I should make them towards the end. We had made an application for $253 million. I'm sorry, we didn't make it. A total of $253 million were requested from the New Jersey Department of Transportation. That included our application to do additional changes on some of the some of our roads. Unfortunately, that was declined. Our request for funds, again, to do a bike path was declined. We're still interested in getting the flashing lights that the county finally agreed to let us put in before the curve and after the school. So we don't know the status of that yet. I think that was the end of that bad news. We did have something on... Oh, yeah, I wanted to point out that those of you who remember the young student Kelby, who came in about a dogfighting project, raising money to fight dogfighting, that our animal control people came down to help with the project, which was very nice. They did that on a volunteer basis. And there we have the landmark. We've been requested to provide information to Landmark. Landmark is a company which buys tower leases. So basically what they do is they take the proposed income stream that we're getting from those antennas on the water tower, and they buy either some or all of the term and then pay us that value, basically the present value less their profit. Personally, I think it's not a great idea. If we had a sudden need for a lot of money and we're willing to give up all of our income going forward, it would be something that I think we should seriously consider. But since we're already going to get the revenue and we don't need to have it particularly speeded up at this point, and since doing this obviously involves them taking a profit, but they have asked for certain information about the terms of those leases, how long they are, how much we're being paid, and how often we're being paid.
Are we obligated to give them that information?
We are not. And I don't see any reason to, but I thought I'd bring it to the council and see if anybody had a contrary view. Otherwise, I'll write them a nice letter that says, thank you for your interest. Have a nice day.
I would agree with
good?
That.
Okay. And John Block is later on. The
committees are not on the agenda, but I think we should have committee reports, but you might do it after the ordinances or wherever you want to do it.
Well, we didn't have to do it tonight.
I was going to do it before I did some investigating on the request by John Block to have a curb put in. Had a conversation with Carmella, actually a written conversation with Carmella. Basically, her answer is, well, $4,000 just for the curb. However, we don't know what the groundwork is like out there, so we need to do a survey because originally it wasn't done. That was the end of the street. Every place else on that road has a sidewalk. Do you want us to put in a sidewalk? So basically, let me just see if I've got that right. At a minimum, would require 100 linear feet of curb. This is the only location without a sidewalk. And if you're going to make this location consistent with the remainder of the block, we'd also add 100 square feet concrete apron and a 360 square feet concrete sidewalk, as well as lawn restoration within the right-of-way. Regardless of whether just the curb is installed or the curb, sidewalk, and apron are installed, the area has to be surveyed because there is a slope to the road and the turnaround. And if we install the curbing along the length, water will probably get caught at the low end of the turnaround, et cetera, et cetera. So she's saying the cost of just the curb is $4,000, but it's going to cost a bunch more. So we need to consider how we want to respond to Mr. Block at some point.
Well, the question, I believe the question you raised was, that's the cost of doing the work. What is her cost from the borough standpoint of doing inspections, whatever would have to be done? That's the $4,000 or?
No, that's putting in a curb.
Right, okay. So,
so the question was, what happens if you're already out here, if we tie this in with another project, right? So we're not paying for the trucks to get out here, et cetera, what would it cost to add this? And this was her response. She's basically saying, I'm not sure, but it's going to be a bunch of money. Technical term of art. I'll tell you exactly what I asked her. One of the houses on Lake Drive was originally built with a turnaround in lieu of a driveway and curb. This was a requirement or request from the borough because the house, when built, was the last house on the block. The current owner has requested the borough to install curbs with an 8-foot cutout for safety reasons. While we have no objection, we are trying to determine if the council is willing to pay for the installation. In part, this is a cost question. If we allow the resident to hire a contractor to install the curb or install it himself, we would likely still require review, consultation, and possibly surveying by your firm since it would be installed in our right-of-way. The question is what incremental cost would be to have the borough actually install the curb if it was done in conjunction with another road or curb project. I'm assuming it would be less expensive if done in conjunction with another project. The relevant address is. Okay. So she didn't specifically answer the question of what it would cost to do a survey. I'm not quite sure that's exactly what I asked her, so in fairness.
Yeah, because I'm thinking that with this, if it's something that's that significant in cost, then the question is, what is your, you know, if they did it themselves, what would the cost
of the borough
be?
That was what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Would we have an, I can't imagine this would come to fruition, but would we have an objection if the homeowner wanted to pay for it himself?
Pay for it or do the work?
Or any combination of.
Well, the problem with doing the work is that now you're doing it on a borough right-of-way,
right?
And so it has to be done in accordance with the engineering specs, which
right.
we don't yet have, so she'd have to do the surveys, the inspections, inspect it as they went along, I assume.
Right. Well,
so
presumably she would, if they're doing it in the right-of-way, they'd have to apply for whatever permits they do in the right-of-way, and then I'm assuming Carmelo would make an estimate and then ask for money be placed in escrow for inspection.
So we want to know from her the cost of survey and inspections?
I'm assuming that's the way it would unfold.
And what would the cost
I don't know. I'm not an engineer.
And what cost, if any, would there be to the borough? Because, because assessment, the public improvement assessments would typically, where people have a sidewalk put in, If the municipality puts a sidewalk in there, that's what they levy an assessment for. Nothing to do with a tax assessment. Public improvement assessment, which is
right.
charged to the property owner, the property that's benefited by that improvement.
You pass an ordinance, yeah. And that,
right.
Yep.
But
that's
what's
the normal
what's the
procedure.
Difference, what's the difference, Michael, between the cost of the survey and inspections and the cost to the borough?
Because the cost, because I'm saying if you were to put in an ordinance for an assessment, to do this work, the assessment is then against the property,
mm-hmm.
and all the costs are against the property. It's
right.
not against the borough. The borough is not showing, is not putting out money, you know, that the borough then is paying for this work. The work is paid for by the property owner.
Right.
That's the question that's being asked. The question that's being asked is, we clearly have no objection to there being a curb there. The question is, do we pay or does John Block pay for it?
Well,
or is it done half and half? That's the question. Meaning we do the cost of the survey, we pay the inspector to do the surveys and the inspections, and they put in the work, or some combination. And that's what's being asked. So
yeah.
I'm just trying to specify what we want to ask Carmela that will give us the answer that we're looking
yeah.
for.
Well, certainly in the past, you know, when approvals have been given to do subdivision, the improvements have to be done. The improvements are done by the person who is doing the property owners does the, when you have had subdivisions, the improvements, any improvements that are required are done by the property owner. The borough doesn't have to put out money to do these things.
Okay.
And Lake Drive was, not Lake Drive, but Eleanor Lane was built. The assessment was charged to the owners of the properties. We're subdividing the properties. They paid for it. The borough didn't have to pay Eleanor Lane.
Okay, so that,
Eleanor Lane.
So that assumes, that assumes the answer, which is we're unwilling to pay for this work to be done.
Right.
Okay.
But we have no objection if he wants to pay for it.
Do you want it? Pay for it. Do it.
I guess I would just want to make sure that if he decides to take it on as a project and he contracts for it to be done, that we expect it to be done in accordance with the DOT regulations,
right,
and all of the other regulations. So we absolutely need our engineer to take a look
absolutely
at the final plans.
Well, we need the engineer to do more. I think we're getting a little confused here.
Okay.
The question that was really being asked of the engineer is, look, there's three ways we can do this.
Mm-hmm.
One, we don't allow it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two, we do it ourselves,
mm-hmm,
right, regardless of who's paying. We do it ourselves, which obviously involves the engineering survey, the inspections, the oversight,
mm-hmm,
and the sign-off. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or we tell him that he's got to do it,
mm-hmm,
and if he's going to do it, it still involves the surveys, the layout, the oversight,
mm-hmm,
and the sign-off.
Mm-hmm.
So that cost would initially be paid by us regardless. We may
well, no, I mean, I think it might be that
he's going to pay them. He's going to pay the engineer
escrow
directly.
He's going to pay it in escrow, and the engineer is going to bill against the escrow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Then it doesn't matter
if it unfolds that way. Yeah.
I mean, the discussion we were having last time was because we told him to put a turnaround with the prior owner to put a turnaround there. Should we pay for it or should we not? If everybody's deciding that we shouldn't, let's just have a motion that says we'll permit him to do it. We're not going to pay for it.
Well, could we have a final figure before we say no? So just we can say this is what it would cost the borough. We cannot. We just simply can't afford that or put that. You know, we don't. I mean, it's $4,000 so far.
Right, but they're not going to know until they know what the cost of the survey is. The cost. So basically, we're asking them, the engineers, to go out and do free work to tell us.
Just give them a ballpark figure.
Well, they would
how much it would cost, and you're welcome to.
They'd have to do a ballpark to determine on the amount of the escrow.
Mm-hmm.
If
all right.
I think we should be clear. It wasn't that the borough at some point required him to put in that came up with the idea to put in the turnaround. When the developer came up with his plan, in order to meet the requirements, ordinary safety requirements, he had to have a turnaround. So a fire truck could get down there and turn around. Among other things, that would be, I mean, a car might be able to maneuver and do K-turns and everything, but a larger vehicle would have to be able to get
so
an ambulance.
That.
So that was a matter, specifically a safety matter, that is a condition of getting that original approval.
A condition of the borough and the state to get the consent was that he have a turnaround. Hence, the borough and or the state consented to or required him to have a turnaround.
In order to get
my sentence is correct.
Okay.
Let's
fine.
Move on.
Okay.
So, going back to what it is we want to do here. Okay.
I'm trying to come up with a motion, and I guess the motion is to advise Mr. Block that the borough will not use general taxpayers' money to pay for the restoration of that property with a straight curb. And the reason is that it doesn't benefit all of the people in Roosevelt. It benefits him. So if he's willing to pay for that to be done, then we will talk further.
Second.
Well, would you want to say that the borough will have no objection to his doing it, provided it's done in accordance with the...
Well, I was thinking that, but don't you think that's like the next step after he says,
okay,
fine,
just writing his initial letter
right
to him.
I don't have a problem adding, I assume I'm going to end up writing this letter, so I don't have a problem adding, you know, obviously
conforming
any such...
to
must be in conformance with standard practices as approved by our engineer. Or
right, exactly.
Blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Right. You can
I
do
accept
the work,
that friendly amendment.
The blah, blah, blah amendment.
Yes.
Okay, good.
But no one seconded it.
And I have a question before we vote on it. So his argument was that it was a safety concern.
For his child.
For his child, yeah. Does that change either the motion or the wording?
We understand your, not concern, but we understand your...
Yeah, I don't think I want to say that, because when
concerned
they sue us, I don't want to upset I understand or agree.
It doesn't change it for me because it really doesn't seem right for all of Roosevelt to pay for
We've considered.
The changes.
Okay.
We've considered your request.
If I have a hazardous condition on my property that I have to correct, I have to correct it. Mm-hmm. Can I ask the town correct it for me?
May I have a roll call on the motion, please?
Ms. Bona?
Aye.
Mr. Impelzer?
Aye.
Ms. Lapota?
Aye.
Ms. Malkin?
Aye.
Mr. Tickett?
Aye.
We now move on to council reports.
How did we lose that?
I don't know.
All right. Branch pickup is going to be beginning this week, but it's not going to start until Wednesday because of the rain tomorrow. And secondly, we've still not heard from the county regarding the erosion of the ditch on 571 in front of the deli. But we are still pursuing it and trying to find a way to prevent even more erosion and certainly prevent people from getting hurt in the ditch. In the report.
Okay, code enforcement, Mr. McGrath, you know, as previously noted, was sending as I believe by now he has sent out the letters to the owners of the properties that are designated as for the abandoned property list. He has not notified me of anybody, have gotten any correspondence of anybody objecting to it, or you know, I will check with him. Check with him tomorrow. He'll be in tomorrow, so we'll see if anything, if there have been any further developments on that. But hopefully, this is, you know, this process will get the attention of mortgage holders or whoever else is responsible. Perhaps we can move some properties, get properties moving along. The 35. Did you hear anything about the results of the sale?
I tried to find out. I couldn't find.
Yeah.
It was Monday.
I know.
I know the opening bid
a year
was
ago,
$100.
A week ago, yes. It was $100 the opening bid, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Adjournment.
That was
it.
I'm sorry.
Came back up on the block.
It went another adjournment. Another adjournment. Okay.
Oh, it had an. It was adjournment. It's not just that no one bid.
No one bid, so it goes back. They're gonna go
oh, no
again.
One did.
Was it that nobody bid or that the?
I guess nobody did. So there.
Well, usually then
the next
well,
the
well, those
usually what happens then the lender usually takes
the
it.
The bank didn't
usually.
Bid in.
That's weird.
Plaintiff adjournment.
Well. It's. Are you supposed to buy it?
Mm-hmm.
I know this really has nothing to do with us, but sight unseen because there's.
Yeah, well, you essentially do have to buy it sight unseen.
It's
yes,
odd.
That's why you can buy. That's why you can generally buy these things quite cheap because you buy them sight unseen.
Because if they saw
and
them,
you also be, and also
arm.
Because there's no way of financing them, so you have to have the cash.
35. Is that the one next to you, or two?
Yeah, the one next to her.
No,
yes.
Not Jeanette's. It's the one next to me.
Yeah, she's got two next to her.
It's a horror. It's
yeah, no, it's awful.
If anyone saw it, they would just shriek. The smell. You can smell it from the street.
Yeah, that's
almost.
Awful. I looked in it.
Yeah,
my wife had somebody who was interested in, perhaps, I thought maybe one of her clients was interested in bidding on it, but nothing.
You know, actually, that
the guy did Two Cedar Court. Have you seen what they're doing at Two Cedar Court?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and someone actually bought that. I just.
Yeah, have you
that.
Seen what they've done?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're really doing a ton of work
the
on it.
The ceiling. I didn't think it was possible for a Roosevelt ceiling to fall, and the ceiling was hanging down in there.
Yep.
Hanging down. But as far as. The demolition, and because you can't raise any house in town, right, unless it's absolutely beyond
right.
rehabilitation.
Right.
But who makes that determination?
They would have to. They can't. The ordinance says they can't be raised unless the borough engineer has to concur.
Oh,
they have to bring in engineering proof, and the borough engineer has to concur as well. Then
because two seater, I was worried that it might meet the requirements.
Yeah, but the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the walls are still there.
Yeah, the one next to me, I think,
the walls
is rehabable.
Yep.
Can we get the guy who's doing it to take a look at 35 Homestead?
Yeah, it's
I mean,
really. I've been in there 100
yeah.
times.
If anyone knows
it's
him,
it's a horror, but it's. I think it's absolutely. It can be rehabbed.
I'm sure it can be rehabbed.
35. It just needs. It needs floors. It needs a roof. But
yeah, the only one that we've had that really got to the point where it couldn't be rehabbed is that. When at 19 South Rose,
but I heard that actually could have been saved at the time.
I don't know. No, the wall, the concrete, the cinder blocks were falling apart.
Well, so two-seater, the roof was there was netting under the
yeah,
ceiling.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
well, hopefully we don't lose any more of them. Okay.
And what about Landau's house? Is that does anyone know who owns that, or is
well,
it the
presumably
bank?
The people still own it? Who the owners Bartlett and. what's the name?
Yeah,
the Louisiana.
One that's near Alabama, I think.
Yeah, they still own it, so
really?
It's up to the bank to foreclose on it. Mm-hmm. That's why the idea is hopefully the abandoned property list, if they're on the abandoned property list, that the banks will get, it'll get the bank's attention and they'll move more quickly on it. That's really the biggest hope that we can get that. And then, Stacey, would you want to talk about the Environmental Commission?
Are you done with your report?
Yeah, but she's just sort of supplement to the environment, because she's the Environmental Commission representative, and since environment is part of it, I just thought she could put that in her report. Yes.
I'm confused.
It is confusing.
Are you done with your report?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Stacey will supplement it now.
Okay, so we had the attack on autumn olive, which was headed up by the Invasive Species Committee, and that was very successful, I understand. I'm not a part of the committee, but I am part of the Environmental Commission, and I understand the committee was very pleased with what they had gotten done, that they had gotten a lot more done than they intended. So that was great. Also, the same weekend, the next day, we had the second half, the field part of the stream monitoring training, which was done by AmeriCorps. Our ambassador came out, and we went over to the stream and got muddy and looked at bugs. Mary, would you like to? So the Environmental Commission had a very successful weekend, back-to-back events. And in addition, I have an update. Jill, Acon sent me an email. Were you going to cover the beaver deceiver, or is that me?
Go ahead.
So he's been in touch with Peter Winkler, who he's been speaking with from the New Jersey Division of Fish and Wildlife regarding the beaver dam. And he said the New Jersey Division of Fish and Wildlife have been out to the site numerous times. There's no recent beaver activity. The water is continuing to flow, and they have begun staging the materials and will begin installation of the beaver deceiver soon. That's all I got.
I just want to add that, as long as you're speaking about environmental, I believe there's a rabid raccoon in town. The other night, he literally was clawing at my window, trying to come in my house. Fascinating and so creepy at the same time. And then the next day I saw a big mourning dove was dead right where he was trying to come into my house, because in my den the windows are very low and he was literally clawing to get in at the window. I thought it was a cat at first. And then the next day I saw this. So then I turned on the outside light to get a better look. He ran, and then later on I saw him hovering over my deck on a tree branch. But then the next day I saw a really large bird dead that looked like it had been attacked. So I didn't call the police or wildlife because I have no idea where he is, but just be aware that I'm sure he's rabid. And he's.
Why do you think he's rabid? Because
usually
if they're out during the day, they're rabid.
Yeah, but what raccoon tries to come? I mean, he was clawing at the window, looking right at me. That he should be afraid of me.
What show did you have on television?
I didn't. I heard a thump, and that's when I walked in.
There were more doves in there.
Thump, and then he just started clawing at the window, and I put my face right up at his, so he should have run immediately.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe
he is.
So.
Did you call the animal control?
I didn't, because he disappeared so fast, and I thought,
what are they going to do?
What are they going to do? They're going to come out in big
catch
dark
him.
Town.
Maybe they could trap out. Yeah, they could trap.
Yeah, they could trap.
Put
guess,
a trap
yeah.
there. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
And test him, because if he's got rabies and somebody was bitten,
then we better.
Yeah, I mean, the burr. I was shocked to see.
Yeah,
that bird.
Should. Yeah, probably should call them.
Yeah, all right.
Call animal control. Yeah. Call, have the clerk call them. Whatever.
Yeah. Further to your report.
Oh no.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry.
Deputy Clerk, anything to report?
Mm-hmm. We received a notice of appeal from municipal court conviction on Friday in regard to a property on
Homestead.
Homestead.
Is it on Homestead?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And Litigation Street.
The Seligman House.
Mm-hmm.
The Seligman House. Ralph Seligman, who was the planning board chair for many, many years.
Yeah.
That was his house.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know
for
that.
eternity until.
This is the greatest of ironies. The people who are the staunchest defenders of the integrity of the zoning plan for decades, and that their house should be the subject of it.
Pretty much. I did not know that. So we will keep you posted on that.
Great, thank you. Councilwoman Malkin.
Well, I spoke to our CFO, who has begun to work on our budget, so we'll be having a finance meeting. Well, he was kind of vague, but soon. And then I also met with Eric Schubiger about the July 4th picnic, and then we went over some things, and then we have another meeting this week with April Sook and someone else from she's bringing.
I understand that Fire, First Aid, and the PTA all met about the 4th of July. Did they tell either you or Eric about that in advance?
You know, they sent a letter rescinding all their involvement from the 4th of July committee.
No, actually they sent a letter that said, we can't lead it, but we'll be more than glad to assist.
No, they didn't say they can't lead it.
Then they came back to a public meeting and said, you know, now maybe we can. I'm not sure if you were at that meeting, but we have more people and we have some more time. But I did at that point direct them to meet with, to clear everything through Eric and through you.
Yeah. So, well, we have a meeting set up for this.
Okay, but
there were, I mean, at first they did say, they said they would help, but basically they dissolved their bank account and they ceased all their 4th of July activities. Then they came back with a pretty full schedule of what they want to be involved in, or pretty full agenda. So we'll
just want to make sure everybody's sort of going in the same direction, which is your direction.
Yeah, I mean, I missed that meeting, so I didn't realize they had come to a meeting, because I was completely surprised when I saw the next email about what they were willing to do. But we're going to meet this week and try to figure it out. So, and that's all.
Peggy, the Tai Chi people would like to march in the parade if there's a parade, so should we work with you or?
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I mean, not much to. We'll just make sure you include it. How many people?
Well,
not that it matters, but
8 maybe. Okay. And we might have a chase car because some people can't make it all the way
all
around.
The way around, yeah.
So.
Okay. Note that.
We don't need an AED, do we?
No.
You're talking about chase cars, it starts getting scary.
Well, presumably the first date will be right in the parade, so everything will be handy.
Next person, LaPuddy. Utilities.
Oh, well, so Jeff prepared the PowerPoint for all of you, so but he suggested I present it. Utilities Weekly, or A Week in the Life. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
Wait, go back. Where's the pictures?
Where the pictures are gone. Why is that?
That is the problem.
Yes, it certainly is.
Mine, they come up on mine, which is weird.
They come up.
I just did this at my house, and it has all of the things in it, but if now it's gone, what did you do?
I don't know. I snuck into your house after you did that. And
it's gone. It really is. Wait,
there we go.
There's a picture.
Looks like Roosevelt.
That is a fountain on our Woodland Trail. You should be able to click a button and have
I'm going to go to slideshow. There it is. So, it doesn't show the movie. But this is along the Woodland Trail on the way to the sewage treatment plant. This is one of those elevated manholes, and water is gushing out. Earlier that day, the Route 24 truck had been along Homestead, our favorite road, and had jetted all of the line along Homestead up through the curve when it goes on to Rochdale. But the problem was, in jetting all of that line, they seemed to have freed up some debris, which then proceeded through the sewers
got all the way down to the main sewer line that comes into the sewage treatment plant, and there got hung up on some grease that was stuck in the line. So they came and they jetted the main line about 9:30, 10 o'clock at
about
night
10,
on
yeah.
Wednesday night. And here is a member of the council who came out with his flashlight to watch the operation, along with our deputy clerk. And here is Toby and me. I'm freezing. So that was one problem, and it was alleviated through the jetting of the line. If you cook with grease, you should not put the grease down your sink, because when grease hits the cold water that is in the sewer, it gels, congeals, and that forms a clog. You should collect grease that you have from cooking, put it in a can, and dispose of it in your regular trash.
I also
just
make
saying.
A suggestion. Never attend one of these events wearing sneakers.
Do you need petty cash for new sneakers?
Actually, the amazing thing when we finally loosened it up is that the, you know, you think of grease gelling into the sort of thing you put in your bacon grease can. No, it forms like a rock.
Yeah.
When all those greases get together, it's literally a solid white rock.
Yeah.
It's just, it's impressive. Something you wouldn't see if you didn't go up to the sewer plant and stare down into the auger, which I recommend to anybody.
So the next problem is we had a pre-construction meeting with Carmela Roberts and the Pittsburgh tank folks who are working on our elevated water tower. They're correcting all of the issues which had been identified by the NJDEP, and as well as those OSHA problems. So before they started work, they identified the fact that we're in a red flag time, which fires are really, well, it's very dry. So the problem is that there would be a fire hazard if they were welding at the top of the tank. When they weld, you get sparks going all over. The ground is just, there's a lot of leaves, there's a lot of debris, you could easily start a fire. Again, our deputy clerk in her hard hat. And the back of Jill in her hard hat.
And the back
and
of one of our firefighters, our fire chief.
Yes.
In his
the solution, hat. We tried several solutions. What we first worked with a member of the public to hook a hose up to his house, but there simply wasn't enough water to really wet down. You have to have a wide area because the tank is so tall. So the solution was to get a hose from Hightstown and run the fire hose from the fire hydrant that's by Action Packaging across the roadway and up the hill and to wet down the area before they start working in the morning, and then perhaps at lunchtime, and they have somebody on fire watch ready to squirt any fire that might start. So it goes up the hill and through the woods. There's April in her hard hat. And there's one of the contractor guys watering for safety. So that is your typical day in the life of utilities. Couple other things. We've been working on the lift station at Lake Drive, trying to get gas to power the gas generator there. We thought everything was going to be done on Friday, but in fact they were unable to get the lines run underneath. That had to be a separate work order from the installation of the gas, so that's still not done, but it is on the docket and should be done soon. At the last meeting, which I wasn't able to be at, I had prepared a job description for part-time help for Toby, and I was wondering if there were any comments on that job description. The concern, as Peggy raised, it was that we're paying overtime for Toby and a lot of money. And Toby would cut his overtime if he had a part-time helper. It would also be a really good idea to have somebody who might be going for their water sewer operator license be kind of an apprentice under Toby, so they could learn our system, they would learn where everything is filed and kept and how you do the testing and so forth. So I really would like to move on that and to hire somebody for 20 hours a week. So if there's no objection, I'd like to advertise the part-time job.
It's the right thing to do.
Yes, let's do that.
Okay. And I had one other. They paved Windsor Road. I know that Roosevelt paid for the part of Windsor Road, which is in Roosevelt. They're doing a nice job paving. That was a good thing.
Yes.
Now I'm done.
Did you want to talk about the meeting with Manuel?
Okay.
At all, or?
Well, I thought we'd bring that for the next meeting because they're preparing something for us for the next meeting, and it'll be on the agenda.
Okay.
But you'll remember that Manuel did this whole presentation. He and his boss, Mike Samuels, are coming back to us with a proposal for how they might group all of the projects that need to be done into larger projects that we would then apply to NJEIT for funding. The idea is with NJEIT, we qualify for 50% principal forgiveness loans, which means 50% grant in layman's terms. And so the more that we can group into projects that we submit to EIT, the more that the engineering design can be included in the 50% principal forgiveness. So we really get a lot more for our money if we can put these projects into some grouping. So rather than having one project which is to retrofit three pumps with variable speed drives, you have a larger project that deals with pumps and controllers and valves, and you group them and package them all up together.
The other problem is that the cost of raising money, particularly through the bonding process, doesn't change materially. So if you're going to pay $50,000 in fees and expenses to raise $100,000, you're going to pay $50,000 in fees and expenses to raise $1.2 million. So the more you can stuff into those loans at once, the better.
The other thing that is an advantage is that NJEIT requires you to look at all other alternatives. We have talked about whether one of the alternatives for Roosevelt is to take our sewage and pump it to another sewage treatment plant for treatment instead of rehabbing our old sewage treatment plant. We want to see if that's cheaper. One of the things that they would do as part of this packaging is to do that alternative for us and cost it out. So I think it's really to our advantage to do this, and I know you'll all be looking forward to the next meeting where I really talk about this in depth.
Ordinances. First ordinance that we have is that anybody like to introduce 16 dash? Hang on a second. We have a public hearing, so we're going to introduce to have a public hearing. And then vote, right?
Right, you introduce it, and then you have a public hearing, and then you have a vote.
So, would anybody like to introduce 16-002?
Yes. Introduce Act Ordinance 1602, final read, ordinance amending Chapter 23, Redevelopment Plan of the Code of the Borough of Roosevelt.
Is there a second?
Okay, second.
John. Okay. Opening up for public hearing on Ordinance 16-002. Final reading and public hearing, an ordinance amending Chapter 23, Redevelopment Plan of the Code of the Borough of Roosevelt. This is the has to do with the gas station property. The gas station property is currently in two parts. Actually, it's three parts. You have a U around the house that's there, and that U is divided into two. The south
portion is commercial. The north portion was affordable housing to meet our affordable housing requirements, which we no longer have. And this allows us to change the entire thing into a redevelopment zone, a portion of it was already the redevelopment zone, but to join all those properties back together. This was introduced quite a while ago. It went to the planning board. The planning board came back with recommendations, which we adopted in our consent agenda. And this is the second and final reading of that ordinance. Anybody in the public have any comments about Ordinance 16-002? There being none, we call the roll.
Ms. Bona?
Aye.
Mr. Unhelzer?
Aye.
Ms. Lapode?
Aye.
Ms. Malkin?
Aye.
Mr. Tipton?
Aye.
Would anybody like to introduce 16-004?
I would like to introduce 16-004.
Thank you. Would somebody like to second that?
Second.
So here's what happened. We adopted all of our codes in a nice package, but somehow this particular piece of our ordinances was not included in the package. And this is the one that sets the rates for water and sewer. So clearly we need to have that ordinance. This is unchanged from what it was. It just didn't make it into the book.
Any questions or comments from the public on this is the public hearing on Ordinance 16-004?
When you say no changes, that means no increases in fees, perhaps?
Correct.
Yeah. We had the old fees. We adopted the new fees. When they codified it, they put in the old fees, so we're just putting in the new fees.
Okay, so
the short version.
There is an increase, but
there is an increase, but you've already been paying it.
Right. It's correcting an error.
Yeah. Are there any other questions or comments from the public? There being none, can we please call the roll?
Ms. Bona?
Aye.
Mr. Impelzer?
Aye.
Ms. Lapode?
Aye.
Ms. Malkin?
Aye.
Mr. Tipton?
Aye.
Next, we have Ordinance 16-005, first reading and introduction. Would somebody like to introduce 16-005?
Introduce Ordinance 16-005, an ordinance prohibiting rentals in all residential district durations of less than 30 days and adding Section 4.430 to the Borough of Roswell Zoning Ordinance.
We have a second.
Second.
This relates to... we are clarifying that the rental of a house on an overnight basis is essentially acting like a hotel, a bed and breakfast, whatever you want to call it. And our purpose is to assure that if people are renting houses, that they are renting them to live in as a family unit as opposed to a hotel. Do we have any questions or comments from the public?
No, how about the council?
We haven't gotten there yet.
Public's before us?
It's the public hearing.
Well, there's no public hearing.
First
it's
reading.
The first reading. I mean,
yeah.
You can...
Yeah.
Oh,
well,
it's the public.
Can
we
do a
public
hearing?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to, you can. If you're not required.
Well, I'm still asking for comments. There were none. I'm going to want to add something to the record, but...
Well, how was the 30 days determined?
The 30 days was determined because there are similar statutes in New York City, Chicago, and San Francisco, I believe, that were recently adopted. The 30 days is, there is case law out there that says you can't prohibit rental for a year or less. You can't completely prohibit rental.
Case law for a residential, like an R40 neighborhood?
For a residential neighborhood.
Yeah. We don't want this to be thought of as a hotel, but who goes in and out of the house every 30 days? I mean, that's basically a long, like in a Marriott extended stay.
Let me rephrase it. Who goes in and out of the house every day?
That's a hotel.
No,
but every
that's 30 days. That's Homestead Lane.
Well, no, I understand. I live there. I know.
Right.
However, I feel that 30 days is also, I mean, it's
too short.
It's way too short.
Yeah.
I mean, every once a month is a long term. It's like an extended stay.
Did you read the
hotel.
Read the legal memo from Rich's firm?
I don't agree with him. I mean, I just think 30.
Well, I don't like it either, but we want a defensible.
Rich, would you want to just give the?
Well, there's, I mean, there was a case addressed in the memo that the borough of Belmar set a minimum rental of a year in residential areas, and the court struck it down, and and said it was too much of an infringement on.
But do you think that's because it's a tourist town?
I mean, that's not what the case turned on.
Excuse
me,
Counselor, do we want to have this discussion in public?
No, we probably should not.
Okay.
Well, can we table it until we have...
No, I suggest that we have a closed session, then come back out.
Okay.
But I would like to make a comment about the ordinance. They add something to the record. Something that should be considered in adopting this type of ordinance. The borough of Roosevelt is unique. It was formed as a community of people of similar purpose by the federal government. Not only was it intended to be a close community and all that that close community entails, such as mutual care, support, and knowledge, but it was originally intended that all residents be fully or partially dependent on each other, not only as members of the same social community, but also codependent for their livelihoods as part of the original triad or triangle of factory, farm, and store on which Jersey Homesteads was based. End of statement.
And to a great extent, that is still what life is like in Roosevelt. Maybe not the employment part, but the way the social structure of the town.
I'm just adding another reason for the court.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you want to go into private session, so we're going to move. Would somebody move to have 16-005?
I believe I did, didn't I?
No, move to have 16-005 moved on the agenda. Well, actually, I'm just going to move it. I'm going to move. Ask you to withdraw the motion to approve 16-005. I'm going to move it until after the closed session.
Okay.
Second.
I think I don't need a second. I think I just need a... I need you to withdraw your motion.
Mm-hmm. And then the second would have to be withdrawn as well. Whoever seconded it would have to withdraw.
Would have to withdraw.
I withdraw the second.
Okay. Okay. So let's go to old business redevelopment ordinance. We just did that.
I don't know why that's on there.
I don't know why it's on there either. Okay. New business. Cemetery services. I know that we had... You're pointing. Okay. A couple of things. Our deputy clerk, also known as Kelly Tires, was at a program where a group was basically using equipment, I assume a sonar-like device, to determine where various bodies lay in old revolutionary cemeteries, and suggested the possibility, which was a good suggestion, that perhaps we ought to contact that group and discuss having them come out to our cemetery to help us organize and determine basically where everything is. We have reached out to them. We're waiting for a... it's sort of bouncing around over there. We're waiting for a response from them. I know that there's been some discussion that Peggy's been working on getting a cemetery manager. I think it's like $250 a month or a unit.
Something, yeah.
Yeah. And as soon as we get the final information, I think we should do that as quickly as possible. Yeah.
That's
it's
the way...
Cheap.
That's the way, way it's going now. Almost... Well, there are very, very few municipal cemeteries left. We're one of the few towns, at least in New Jersey, that has a municipal cemetery. But whether it's municipal or private or religious, almost all cemeteries now have a manager.
Yeah, the maps are that we inherited are a bit of a mess. And so
I think a bit is a bit of a mess.
I'm trying to be understated and avoid litigation. Anyway, so we have some issues up there, and we'd like to get somebody up there.
Ground-penetrating radar they use.
Ground-penetrating radar.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
So if there are any submarines out there, we'll find them, too. Landlord registration fee is a proposal. We're asking that an ordinance be adopted to provide that the certificate of occupancy inspection fee tonight be $100. with a separate filing fee of 15, which matches many of the surrounding towns. Right now, I think we have something like, basically a lot of our records reflect the fees and penalties that were imposed in 1936, where a nickel was a lot of money. So $100 doesn't seem to be out of line. Cell tower lease, we discussed.
By the way, in perspective, I think the fee is now $75 for a certificate. There's no great change.
For the CO?
Yeah.
No, there was a charge, and I forgot my briefcase. The first time in 9 years I forgot my briefcase. I had all this stuff. It is a really bad sign. I thought it was 30, but I could be mistaken.
Yeah, they've been charging 75. The two different things.
Make it 200. I don't care.
It's supposed to cover the cost of the service. It's a fee. It's not a tax, so it's supposed to cover the cost of the service. But the you have two things put together. The other second thing is a landlord identity statement, which is a state form, and the one thing that's left out is it has to be a box for the grade of heating oil, if they use heating oil. That's required under the state law as well. So, but this is only filed when the person first makes it a rental property. It's not something that's refiled every time as a new tenant. You have to give a copy to the new tenant, but it's not filed every time it's a new tenant.
What are you talking about, Mike? There
were two things put together.
Right.
The landlord registration form is different than a CO form. They're two different things. The CO is something that you're required to get every time there's a change of occupants. The landlord registration form is required, it's supposed to be filed by state law every time a property becomes a rental property.
Well, you also have an ordinance to that effect. It's 10.3 in your code book, which says that everyone who rents a property is supposed to have a license to do so. Yeah.
And I would disagree with you, Michael, respectfully.
What?
Your statement was that it has to be filed with the state.
No, I didn't say that. I said it's prescribed by the state.
Prescribed by the state that it be filed and shown to the occupant.
And it's filed with the municipality and given a copy is supposed to be given to the occupant.
Right.
Right.
Your statement implies that it gets filed once a year or biannually or some other period of time.
No, filing is, it's filed when the information changes, you file it.
Right. Currently, that would be daily.
But the information on the record owner of the property, the name of the registered agent, the name of the managing agent, that's not daily. I don't understand what you mean. None of this changes daily.
Don't you do it every time there's a new rental?
CO.
No, the CO form you have to do every time.
Okay, not the rental.
That's what I'm correcting. The CO is different from the registration. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
But since I don't think we're...
Sorry?
I don't know why this was stapled on, so I'm not sure why we're discussing it.
Okay.
All right, so... but nonetheless, it has to be filed.
And it says, and the thing is, the new business is landlord registration fee, and I think you're talking about a CO fee, raising the CO fee. Or whatever, or prescribing the form for the CO application. That's what you're doing.
No, the issue was we did not previously have a landlord registration form.
Right.
So I apologize for talking about the CO fee before we were talking about the landlord registration
form.
Right,
okay, yes.
But, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the state prescribes the form, and the landlord has to get a copy on his own and file it, and how many others do.
Got it. Got it. Okay. ISO report. So we received a letter from ISO, which is the insurance rating organization. This is the organization maintained by the various insurance companies. They come out and they rate towns for their, among other things, their fireability. We had an inspection several weeks ago. The result of which was that ISO has told us that they are lowering our rating from 6 to 10. The fire rating goes from 1 as the best to 10 as the worst. Apparently we had gotten it up to a 6, but following our, based on our current state of affairs with our fire department and equipment and buildings, et cetera, they have advised us that they are putting us at a 10. So that may or may not affect various homeowners as far as insurance goes. And I think that's it. Okay, so I'm going to open for...
Well, I'd like to add something to new business.
Sure.
I'd like to know if anything has been done to remedy the incident, because I haven't heard anything else about it, between a member of the fire department and a member of the public who was treated extremely disrespectfully and inappropriately, and nothing seems to have come from that incident.
There's Could you be specific as to who we're talking about?
Yes, our fire chief cursed and insulted and yelled at Mr. Clark.
And I advised him to call Mr. Clark promptly and apologize. It took him a week to try to reach Bob. When he did, just under a week, when he did, he called him several times. Apparently Bob does not pick up that line, and I'm assuming he hasn't called you back from that.
He called me twice. I didn't pick it up because it was my default ring, and it was listed on my phone as a call from Rahway, New Jersey. So I didn't pick it up when it occurred, like a multitude of other calls that I don't pick up.
But he has not since you and I spoke. He hasn't reached out to you again?
No.
And I think that that's indicative of a deeper inherent problem. To just tell him to apologize does not address the problem of insulting a citizen, of outbursts and cursing that we all know has occurred more than just this one time. So to just say you should apologize, I don't think addresses the problem.
Well,
that's what you tell a child. You have to say you're sorry. But an adult who is a representative of our town, and there's got to be some either training or anger management or something, because it's happened many times as we've seen in this Borough Hall, and now what happened was completely inappropriate and inexcusable. And so to just say you have to say you're sorry, which he hasn't,
my point was he attempted to apologize.
No, Jared, no.
Excuse me, I'm speaking now. If I may? Okay. May I respond?
Go, yeah.
Thank you. I agree, and did agree at the time, that it was completely and utterly inappropriate. Actually, it took me a second, as Bob will probably remember, for me to figure out which one of us had been called that name, because it came out of nowhere. I told him that he should apologize because that was the right thing to do. The problem with taking the position that because he did something inappropriate that we should take some action, regardless of what it is, we can certainly consider it. However, if you would like a list, and I certainly get one all the time, of people who have been inappropriate, both here and outside of here, I don't think we want to start going after everybody who was, shall we say, inappropriate. Okay? I do believe that, Mr. Clark is owed a very sincere apology. I think that remark was not only completely inappropriate, as I've said, but came out of nowhere. There was a discussion, a perfectly reasonable discussion, about a suggestion that his wife had made about, I think, access to outside access to bathrooms. So I don't know where that came from. But I will go back again and speak to him and suggest that he needs to go to Mr. Clark and he needs to apologize, preferably in person.
Well, I think as I said before, though, this has happened numerous times with him. So I don't think it's a matter of just apologizing. I think it needs to be explained to him or some kind of arrangement for... He has outbursts all the time. This one was just particularly bad. So to say you're sorry, it just happens again and again. I think he needs... Many people may have hurled insults at other people, but this was a direct... terrible thing to say, and he's not just anyone, he is our fire chief, he represents the town, And I think that there needs to be some kind of training, oversight, classes, something, because it, as we all know, he's cursed and stomped out of here many times, and this time he hurled it directly at a person. That's not acceptable. Does anyone have any opinion about this?
Then here is what I will do.
But before you say anything, could I get a jump on the public portion and say a few things?
Sure. I think we're in the public portion, aren't we?
We're now in the
public portion.
We're on something that's relevant to what I know about. This double expletive that he flung at me, was derogatory to me, but it was also derogatory to all disabled persons. It was like a double expletive. And it constituted tarred, and like as retard as opposed to a disabled person.
I'm sorry, I don't believe that's what he said.
Yes, I think he said, well, there are no children present, so it was fuck tarred.
I thought it was wad, but whatever. Okay.
Yeah, no. So, at any rate, it constituted, in my mind, gross incivility, unbecoming of a public official representing the borough. It created, frankly, a hostile civic volunteer environment. You've heard of the hostile work environment for workers. Well, volunteers are workers that help in the committee. You asked me to be on the committee. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure you called that session where Carmela briefed us, and along with her associate, and we got to ask some questions, because prior to that, the engineers and sub-engineers were just running around with the fire chief looking at the buildings and answering his questions. So since it had been billed as something for the committee, the advisory council, to participate in, we didn't get a chance, those of us, and there were only two of us present, myself and Jack Rindt. And Jack, probably, I think he had already quit the committee. So basically, I was the only member of the advisory council present there, and you got us together so I could get briefed by what the engineers had found out, and they could ask questions and receive some further input from somebody other than the fire department and first aid squad. So I started talking, and obviously he had no patience whatsoever for anybody participating in this process from the advisory council. And I happened to be the one that was there, and he directed it at me. Another reason he directed it at me was because I'm the only one he really has to worry about on the advisory council, because I'm the only one that represents the people who voted no on the referendum. So, of course, it was directed at me, and he didn't think that he had to respect me at all. And so I think it's time, with this fire department, some of the members, and starting with the chief, to have a little bit of progressive discipline where they are called to account for their rages that they have exhibited from time to time in the borough. We still don't know what the outcome was with regard to the horn-blowing incident that occurred after the referendum. And I think, given the volatility of the fire chief, that it's quite possible that he was involved in that and hasn't been accountable for it at all.
Bob, I was with you up until you made an assumption that somebody had done something in that truck. I would ask that you, since we don't have a basis for that.
We've gotten no report back from the council as to who was involved in it and what action, if any, the council would take.
That information qualifies as a personnel issue, which is not to be disclosed, including pursuant to OPRA. It is not disclosable under OPRA. It is not disclosable by us. So to the extent that we have had conversations, taken action, or otherwise done, dealt with it on a personnel level, we can't discuss it. So I'm getting more and more letters that say
even if I'm willing to concede that, I'm not willing to concede that it appears to me that people have never been subjected to progressive discipline because they keep doing the same thing over and over again. I've talked to other people, and they have told me that this is just one example of many. And so it raises the question, when has he been called to account, and has there been any kind of progressive discipline? And also whether it even raises the question of whether there are proper vetting policies on the for firefighters in particular on the part of the borough before they are permitted to join the fire department, let alone become one of the officers of the fire department, because they're in high stress situations all the time. So they are going to be responding to those stressful situations, and they can't just lose it every time they have a problem. There's also, Peggy mentioned anger management counseling, rage control classes, and the like. That might be very, very well be called for. And the borough has to have liability control policies and shouldn't be bringing on board and tolerating excessively people who over and over exhibit that kind of conduct. So that's basically what I have to contribute to this discussion. And I just think that it's futile to expect anything like an apology to be sufficient. He was at the Autumn Olive. I was at the Autumn Olive, which was post those phone calls. He could have taken me aside and apologized then. It's clear to me, and frankly, it was clear to the other people there, that he didn't want to have anything to do with me, let alone give me an apology. And at this point, I would consider that it would be impossible for it to be sincere, and would not accept it. That's all I have.
Okay. So I hear you on, or Peggy, on anger management as a possibility. I will certainly look into it. I'm not sure exactly how much I'm allowed to say, so I'm not going to say a lot, but I will certainly get into it and see what we can do. And I do not, for the most part, with the one exception that I pointed out, do not disagree with you. He has exhibited a lot of anger. I have to say I have not seen that on site, but it just may be because he's too busy to get angry. Okay, but seeing him at the, you know, the fire scene, the downed trees on the houses, that kind of thing, I have not seen that there. But I can certainly ask if others have. I do think it is absolutely inappropriate. I think it's inappropriate when anybody does it. But certainly as fire chief, it's an issue. Part of the issue is, of course, we have a very limited number of potential fire chiefs. We have a very limited number of volunteers in town. And sometimes you're dealing with people you don't necessarily want to deal with because we need them, and because they're willing to volunteer. I may be one of them. I mean, I'm not pointing at him in particular. But I agree that something ought to be done. I'm not quite sure of the definition of progressive punishment, but I would much rather, to the extent that it's possible, that it be something that solves the problem not only for our benefit but for his as well. I can't imagine it's very easy going through life if your fuse is that short. Under any circumstances, so I will sit down, both with our counsel and with others, and see if we can get something done.
Thank you.
Other comments from the public?
Yes, I just wanted to ask about a couple things that came up tonight. I guess starting with the cemetery management, I thought we had an arrangement with Doug of the Dury Monuments in Hightstown. I thought, this is going back a little ways, he had a map of the cemetery and that he was our person
he's
in charge.
To an extent, he still is, uh-huh. but he has back. We never made him. He asked if he could be appointed mm-hmm. our cemetery manager, like an official title. And at the time, we weren't willing to do that. But time has evolved and things change, and it may be time to do that. But he did ask to be, you know, to be our manager. So I've been asking specifically lately, but I'm sure he would do that. There's a few things he doesn't do anymore. They don't do the actual grave digging, right, Kelly?
Right.
Yeah. So another company does the grave digging.
Do they do the marking? Oh. What was the measuring out? That was the
yeah, but he's right. He does have a map, and he's doing the measuring and marking out. And I think he would. I'm pretty sure he would be glad, accept being our cemetery manager.
But yeah, I'm sorry. I don't think he's doing the marking out anymore. That's how the conversation came up originally.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't do it.
Yeah. Oh.
And he said that it's an extra cost for the marking.
Right. Yes. Right. But Doug is still involved with us.
He helps, yes.
Yeah.
But it sounds like a good idea to have somebody kind of in charge because things kind of...
Right.
You know,
oh, yeah.
right.
There's
as we
trash
really learned.
And various
yeah.
Yeah.
No. And hopefully he will accept that because he'd be the perfect person.
Mm-hmm. Then I was just wondering, there was $70,000 out of the emergency authorization that was for the water and sewer,
mm-hmm.
and is that to cover costs you have been experiencing with these various problems that Jill was pointing out, or what is that?
We estimate, I'm going to give a broad answer, and then Jill may have a more specific one. We estimate in each budget, and that's all we can do is estimate how much we're going to need within our budget for each of these various functions of the town. And as the year goes on, particularly when you get near the end of each quarter, and we've just passed the end of a quarter, you realize that maybe you were off and you start adjusting it and moving it between accounts. So we may need less for, just because we were talking about them, less for fire, but more for water sewer. Although water sewer mm-hmm. is not in
water,
our
no,
it's not our budget.
This is for the operating, and I'm guessing that it's coming out of one other line item, but I don't really know. George Lang did not bring this to me before it was on the agenda.
But that's that money, the $70,000, is being moved inside of the water sewer budget. There's two completely different budgets.
Yeah.
He's not moving it from the town budget into water sewer. It's in water sewer already, and it's being moved around inside of water sewer. That's not an image I wanted to project, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. And there's one other thing. Maybe I just have never noticed this before, but on top of the water tower now, there are mm-hmm. antennas. Have they mm-hmm. always been up there? Or I thought, our ones on the side
well,
that
they've
are painted
been there
was
for a while.
Always, right?
Yeah.
They haven't always been there, but it's.
But I mean,
first we just had one, then we had two, but it's been a while.
The yeah. ones around the side are. AT&T, Verizon yeah. also has a separate
right.
contract. They're the one they have
yeah.
three ones on top, and I think they have for about 8 years.
Yeah,
now.
Well, wasn't AT&T first, I think?
Yes,
and
they were.
And then
AT&T
Verizon.
I think the ones on top
yeah.
are newer.
Are newer.
Yes.
Oh,
yes. They
are
okay.
newer.
Anyway,
because the others are painted blue, and they kind of blend in with
right.
the water tower. So these have been there a
to
while.
To blend
I
in with the vultures.
About 8 years, I think.
Oh, no. Sometimes the way the light shines on something, you like say, whoa.
Well, all right. We're all looking up these days to see what's going on at the water tower. But in the pre-construction meeting, one of the issues that came up is, have we counted the number of antennas, and are we sure we're getting paid for every single antenna?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've asked the clerk's office to get us the latest contract so that while we have guys who are actually up there, they can count them and make sure that we're getting paid for everything that's up there.
Have you seen anybody counted the vultures lately?
The vultures took off once the guys went up there with their welding machines.
I don't think so. I think that because they roost right across the street from my house. They just have these times when they're there,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden they're gone for a few months
mm-hmm.
because I have still seen them there. So I think. They'll be back. They'll be back.
I think they'll be back.
They go out to the Cape in the summer.
I think that's true. They have some vacation home.
They only started work up there on Wednesday morning. So
they'll be back.
We're now going to move into, I'm sorry, unless there are additional comments from the public, I'm going to close the public comments portion.
We're now going to move into closed session. Rich will read his speech. Do you have your speech?
I do not, but I will do it from best I can from memory.
Okay. With the understanding that, as is obvious, we are going to come out and we are going to vote on 16-005, which is the 30-day ordinance, or such other day as it may be.
Whereas the Open Public Meeting Act permits a public body to exclude the public from a meeting or portions thereof wherein matters which are exempted from the Act are to be discussed, and whereas the Borough Council of the Borough of Roosevelt has need to discuss subjects exempted from the Act, now therefore it be resolved by the Borough Council of the Borough of Roosevelt that the next portion of the meeting will be held in closed session. The subjects to be discussed are covered by attorney-client privilege and potential litigation, that being discussion regarding an ordinance prohibiting rentals in residential districts for durations less than 30 days, that after the close of the private session, the meeting will resume in public session, and that further action may be taken, and that the contents of the private session can be released to the public after the time of the need for confidentiality is passed, which is after the time the adoption of the ordinance and any time that there might be a challenge to the ordinance.
Where's that CD?
You've got it.
Oh.
Yes, you
do.
Well, you took it. I don't know. You took it.
All right, so let's go to the conference, small conference room, so that these folks can stay here if they want, and then we'll come back out.
Don't